Okay, guys, let's dive into this episode. So I had the pleasure of talking to Jimmy Hunt, who's someone in New Zealand who has made a massive impact on mental health. You know, he's gone above and beyond to talk about his own journey, which can be hard for a lot of people. Many of us suffer in pain. He's done amazing things like create the world's biggest water slide and go down the Waikato River, New Zealand's largest river, as I'm reminded at the start of this podcast, on a lilo or a floaty thing that goes in a pool. That's a long way, and we'll talk about that in the podcast. But what we really dive into is how do you start to work on your mental health? How do you actually make an impact in your day-to-day life? And some of what Jimmy shares in this podcast interview is amazing. If you take just two or three little bits from it, it'll make a massive impact in how you live your life. So let's dive into this episode. I can't wait for you to hear it. Just be aware there are a few naughty words in it. So if you are offended easily, you may not want to listen, but I trust you'll get through it. So dive in. Throw a button. Okay, welcome everybody to The Truth About Dyslexia. In today's episode, we're talking with the awesome Jimmy Hunt. Now, I know of Jimmy because he's a Kiwi who's been traveling the globe a little bit. You know, you've been over in Mexico, am I right, Jimmy?
That's where I live. I'm based out of Mexico, a place called Puerto Escondido on the south coast.
That sounds amazing. And you know, Jimmy became famous in New Zealand because of his I'd like to call it an absolute assault. Yes, assault on mental health in a positive and fun way. You know, your way of reframing stuff was just awesome. You know, looking at your trip down the Waikato River. So imagine a massive, massive river no one would ever do this on.
New Zealand's longest river.
There we go. I pay little attention to the river lengths, but that sounds very true. So jumping down a lilo and then the longest.
No one knows what a lilo is anymore. It's basically a pool float. Like a thing that you sit on and sip your cocktails out of. I swam that 425 kilometers down New Zealand longest river. Stupid idea. Don't do it.
Yeah, but what a great way. And you know what I loved about that and the longest thing of my mind.
Yeah, I also built the longest water slide in the entire world.
Brilliant. Love it. And, you know, but what I loved about all of this is that you wanted to talk about mental health and no one wants to talk about mental health. So stuff it. Let's do something else to start a conversation about mental health.
You've got to manipulate the media, basically. The media has a very simple narrative that they want to talk about. Mental health does not fit in that narrative. And so if you want them to talk about it, then you've got to manipulate them. And very simply, like take something like the world's biggest water slide. It generated about $20 million worth of media coverage in a year. And the simple question is, hey, can I talk to you about your water slide? And the simple answer is yes. If we talk 50% about what I'm doing and 50% about why I'm doing it. And they're all like, yeah, sure. That included 9 minutes on the Today Show in America, where 7 of those minutes I got to talk about mental health.
Wow.
You know, like you don't get to go on those shows and talk about that sort of stuff just for the causes reason. You've got to mix it up so that they want to engage in a particular topic, and then you get to make them listen to what you have to say about stuff they don't usually want to hear about.
I love it, and I think that's the important thing when it comes to mental health. And you know, this podcast is around dyslexia and ADHD, the people who have, well, someone said it really well the other day, faster than usual brains. You know, we all suffer from mental health in some format, and I'm sure, you know, mental health, everyone is, it's 100%, right?
So. I just want to correct you there on just a semantics. And I find it quite interesting because you see what happened was we originally started, by splitting the human experience into two, physical health and mental health. And, you know, so when I say physical health, never does somebody say that they are suffering from physical health. Right? You know, health is an inherently positive word. And yet over the last few decades, we have demonized the term mental health. When I say Mental Health Awareness Week, people think Mental Illness Awareness Week, right? And that's just it. When I say, when I ask a room full of people, hey, you know, hands up if you've got mental health, only half the people put their hands up. You know, no, I don't have mental health problems. And so that's just one of the reasons that we've demonized talking about mental illnesses so much. And we have lost the understanding of what I term mental fitness. And so mental fitness is a brand term that I use because we inherently understand the term fitness. We understand physical fitness. It runs on a continuum, you know, from being severely unfit to being a world-class athlete, right? And you and I both know where we sit on that continuum. Like we figure that out, right? So then we've got someone on the mental fitness continuum all the way from suicidal up to what I term at the very top end, unfuckwithable.
Love it.
So like, you know, the Dalai Lama, right? Like you can't fuck with that dude. You can tell him all the problems in the entire fucking world. And he's like, ah, okay. Like you can't fuck with that guy. And so what we don't really understand to the same capacity is where we sit on the mental fitness continuum, because we don't have the societal understanding of that compared to we know exactly how fit or unfit we are. Right?
It's not a mental mirror, right? It's a lot harder to.
We don't have scales. We don't have scales for that. But even if we do have scales for them, people aren't stepping on those scales. There might be a clinical scale developed. I mean, you know, there are scales. The Hamilton Depression Scale, for example, is the classic. Where do you sit on the mental fitness ladder? Like, I know a lot about this area. I got no idea how the fuck I fit on that scale. You know what I mean? And so we haven't developed the ability to conceptualize ourselves on the mental fitness scale well enough societally yet, which is a lot of the work that I'm doing. I want people to understand where they are on the scale, how to move themselves up, how to notice if they're slipping down, and how to be able to, you know, stop that bounce that so many people suffer from.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. And great pickup, because that mental health thing, I'm as guilty as anyone, you know, of using the phrase mental health, because it's kind of societally, that's kind of what we say, but you're spot on. It's mental and physical health.
Twice on the national news recently, I have heard the anchor say that a person was suffering from mental health.
Yeah.
Like on the national news. And so that's when you know, and like those guys are supposed to be speaking the correct, perfect British English, you know? And yet, you know, and someone has written that, someone has fact checked that, someone has put that on the prompter, and then the newsreader has read that. Yeah. And so that is how deeply it is permeated into a negative framing of what is originally supposed to be a positive scale.
Oh, I'm with you. And like, there are so many of us who, you know, it's hard to check in on your mental fitness, right? Because I find the difference between mental and physical fitness is that, especially with, you know, a lot of the dyslexics and ADHD people we deal with, we have this kind of paradox. One day we're a certain way, the next day we're the opposite. There's a huge swing. And the way we look at it, or the way I talk about it, is imagine a pendulum. If you're dyslexic, if you've got this type of visual mind, the pendulum is just a wider swing. So we go from being the happiest on top of the world person one day to not being able to get out of bed and just eat ice cream and Netflix the next day. And there's no rhyme or reason 2 days later why you've swung back to the other side and you're taking over the world again. So like that swing of mental health, it's a bit different to physical, right? Like however much I like to think about it, I'm my physical health changes at a much slower pace that is more visual, right? Would you say?
Yeah, absolutely it does. I mean, and you can tell when your wife looks at you and goes, honey, probably need to cut back on that ice cream. You know, whereas, and you look down and you're like, you're actually right. I actually genuinely do. But then when your wife says to you, hey, honey, you're a bit snappy at the moment. Fuck off, I am. Nah, fuck off. We don't handle the understanding of the mental fitness like we would the physical fitness, which is something again that it's simply because like there's nothing inherently wrong with what's going on except the fact that we were never taught any of this stuff. And so all we have been done is being shaped by our society. It's shaped by our upbringing, shaped by our education. And what it requires is an unlearning and a relearning. You know, we check in on our physical health periodically, usually because of some external stimulus. Your wife might say something like that. You might look in the mirror. You might try and play with your kids and at the playground. And after 30 seconds, you're like, oh, what the hell is going on? You know, and so those are the external stimuluses that go, oh, shit, I need to actually look at this. We're not very good at observing and accepting the external stimuluses for our mental fitness.
Yeah. Oh, I did it. 100%.
When they come up, we kind of push them away and go, nah. It's much easier for me to ignore this than to deal with it.
Yeah. It's kind of like your walls. Your walls naturally go up and you're like, you know, if you know, you sometimes feel that the only thing you can control is your mind. And if someone is saying you're not in good control of your mind, you feel like you've got nothing. Do you know what it, does that make any sense?
Yeah, completely. I mean, the biggest cause of suffering, I think, in the modern world is the desire for control. Mm-hmm. We want to control everything around us so that things don't change, so that we can continue a homeostasis. And yet that is the opposite of reality. Everything changes always. The only constant is change. And so... you know, that's one of the things that we need to be sort of looking at is the idea of being able to take your ego out of it and just let go.
Yeah. And it's a lifelong process, right? It's not a overnight fix for anyone listening. I think it's really important that, you know, that shift from mental health to mental fitness is a process. It's an understanding. And I guess what I'd ask you, Jimmy, is from the work you've been doing with yourself and others, what are some of the, like, if you were the mental fitness personal trainer, you know, what would you be telling, what would be three or four of your top things that have made the biggest impact in your own and other people's lives, do you think? No pressure.
The number one thing by far and away is step one in all of my processes is self-awareness. And so the best book I've ever read on self-awareness, it's called Insight by Dr. Tasha Urich. That's brilliant. That's a side note. But the understanding, the simple understanding of the concept of mental fitness is the initial and most beneficial thing you can possibly do. And so to give you an analogy, like, let's say you're a world-class swimmer, right? Those dudes are like triangle bodies, ripped to all hell. What, you're some of the fittest people on the planet. And then you go to the Olympics and you win 5 gold medals. You're the best of the best of the best. You're the fittest bastard on the planet. Mm. And so now you're good forever, right?
Of course, you never have to do anything else. Life is complete.
Exactly, right? And no, and we know that, and I'm sorry to pick on you, Daniel Loader, but you, when you, you know, when you quit swimming, swimmers are like known for just blowing out. Like they eat the same amount of calories, but they don't burn anywhere near as many off, and they end up becoming overweight. Because fitness is not binary. It's not you have it or you don't. It's a scale. And you have to maintain that fitness over time. Just like, I mean, I went to the Dalai Lama's monastery in Dharamshala in North India. And, you know, there's all these like 3 and 4 year old Buddhist monks, and they're the cutest little things ever in their little robes and everything like that. And then, you know, all the way up to, you know, whatever age they get up to, but, you know, when they're 21, they don't graduate and they're not like, congratulations, you're now good forever mentally. You don't have to meditate anymore. You don't have to do anything anymore. You're good. Of course not, because mental fitness is the same as physical fitness. We have to understand that it is a game that will last for your entire life. And that doesn't have to be ridiculously overwhelming, because most of us are fit enough physically, because we do, you know, general bits over time. We go for walks, we go to the gym, we play some social sport, whatever. Most of us aren't mentally fit enough because we don't do the daily, weekly, or monthly occurrences of mental fitness that we do like with the physical fitness. And so number one step is understanding that to be mentally fit, you have to put in consistent work over time. Doesn't have to be ridiculous amounts, but it just has to be consistent over time. Because what happens is most of us end up like, when's the main time that someone changes? When they're in severe discomfort, right? when everything's shit, you're like, oh, damn, I better change something. And so they change just enough to get out of severe discomfort into usually mild discomfort. Not even get into good, but just get out of severe into mild. And then when it's only mildly uncomfortable, like I can live with that.
Yeah.
Or maybe they do enough work to get to okay, and everything's okay. And so now I don't put any more work, just stop. And then the fitness sinks again low enough. And then it's like, oh, now I'm in severe discomfort again. I have to do a little bit of work. And we do this game over our lives, from okay to severe discomfort and then okay again. And what we don't do is when we're in okay, we decide I actually now want to get much fitter. And so we move up from here. And then when we fall down, we only fall back down to okay again. And then the game is up here. And so just understanding the way mental fitness works is step number one.
Just before you go on the next, because that was brilliant. And I think for everyone listening, that is so important. And two of the things that, you know, for the dyslexic ADHD community, one, you've got to experience these things in your head. So often we'll hear the phrase mental health to mental fitness. You'll sit here, listen to this podcast and go, that was brilliant. Jimmy's a genius. And then tomorrow it's gone out the other ear. You know, it's super important if all you get from this podcast is to create a picture of mental fitness in your head. The way you learn is through visual cognitive thought. So, you know, you could imagine a giant brain, you know, with two arms, of course, because brains have arms and legs, you know, holding the dumbbell, pulling it up, going, mental fitness, not mental health.
Yeah.
Mental fitness. Keep that in your mind whenever you think today. So important.
And so that goes on to an interesting thing, which is how do we change our brains? How do we literally rewire our brains? And it's through a process called neuroplasticity. what I regard as the greatest discovery of the 20th century, the idea that we can literally rewire our brains through through thought. And I genuinely think the smartest thing I've ever done is distill the entire field of neuroplasticity down into three words that start with C. And they are constant, conscious choices. And so that's how we change our brains. So what that literally is doing the reps, doing the workouts. Like, okay, I'll give you a real world example. Let's say that I want to get ripped. I want to have a six pack, right? And so I make a choice. I choose to have a six pack, ripped. No, doesn't work like that, right? Because we have to make more than a choice. We have to make a conscious choice. Now, conscious choice is simply made up as understanding the intrinsic drivers for why we want to change. Now, if I make a conscious choice, which is I want to get ripped so that I have a six pack so that when I go to Rhythm and Vines next year, I get all the girls. Like, that's an extrinsic reason. And we know scientifically that extrinsic reasons don't work over the long run. And I need an intrinsic reason. So I want to get fit and I want to get ripped because I turned 40 this last year. And my body's going to start breaking down and I've neglected it for 40 years. And so I need to get fitter and healthier in order to be able to have it carry me another 40 years. So I have a good intrinsic driver. Now, do I now suddenly have a six pack? No, of course not. Because what I need and what I fail on, as you saw before the podcast started when I was eating my chocolate, I fail at the same thing that most people fail at, and that's the constant. So you have to make constant conscious choices. Now, to get a six pack, you need to choose to not eat that chocolate that I ate, that to eat lots of protein, to eat high fat, low carb, to then train with the right people at the gym, to watch the right YouTube videos, to learn the right things. You have to make choice after choice after choice after choice after choice. And then at the end, you have a six pack. That's how change happens, by making constant conscious choices. And exactly the same thing works in your brain. When you send neurons down neural pathways, which is a thought, when you send them down particular pathways, the more you send them down particular pathways, the stronger they get. And the less you send them down, the weaker they get. And the stronger pathways are your default responses. So if that's going and eating fucking chocolate instead of a carrot, your default's like a chocolate. And in order to stop that, you have to make constant conscious choices until you've rewired that brain and it no longer becomes a choice. It's just your default. And so because we fall down on constant the most, like that's usually everyone's number one problem, without going into this, we've got half an hour of podcast. The best thing you can do is read a book called Atomic Habits by a guy called James Clear. It is a brilliant way to put lots of things in place and to basically trick us into being able to do the constant, whether it's ways of thinking or alarms that you set in your phone or making things visible, or there's all sorts of tricks that we can do to be able to make that constant part.
I think just jump in there, Jimmy, loving your train of thought there, because it's, and the thing for everyone to remember is, you know, with ADHD and dyslexia, you know, you've got, naturally there's a challenge with your executive functioning. You know, your long-term memory is like an elephant on speed. Your short-term memory is there, but it just doesn't always play ball. And so, yeah, so that constant side of it is the challenge. And exactly what you say about James Clear's book, he's very good at using external motivators, especially for the small conscious decisions, like hide the Xbox. I've still got to do that. Or I love the example. Do you remember the example he used around Twitter and how he waking up at 6 a.m. was the goal, and he had an automatic tweet for 10 past six. And if he didn't get up to turn it off, a tweet went out to his whole database and it said, "I will pay the first three people $50 to come back because I didn't get off my lazy bum."
You know? So there's all sorts of external mechanics we can put in place to trick ourselves, to force ourselves, to teach ourselves to be able to do that. Because our brains aren't strong enough. They're just not. Like, we're just, as first world humans, we're fucking useless. And we need to put these things in place. Now, to go back and answer your other question, what other things should you do for your mental fitness? The answer is really simple. I'll sum it all up in, you asked for like three or four things. I'll give you one, and that one is do whatever the fuck you want. I don't care what it is. It just has to be something. So like, if you told me that you have to do yoga. Now, yoga scientifically is amazing at rewiring your brain. It can relieve trauma. It can do all sorts of things for your mind as well as your body. And if you told me I could now go do yoga every day because of this will help my mental fitness, I will look at you and go, and fuck off. Don't want to do it. And that's fine. Now, you tell me you should go surfing. Surfing clears your mind. It's the negative ions in the waves, the salt water, just the alone time, all of these things. And you're like, okay, cool. I can go do that. And what we are required to do as humans is opt in to our own healing, opt in to our own mental fitness. And just like some people, when they want to get physically fit, run. You'll never see me run fucking anywhere. Just refuse to do it, hate doing it, and not going to do it. You hit me a tennis ball, I will run like a bastard to get to that tennis ball. I love going for a walk up a hill in the in nature. But you will never get me to go to a gym class. No. And yours will be a different makeup. And so will every listener here. Now there's some fundamental ones that meditation, pretty much the best thing you could possibly do for your mental health. Look into it. I don't need to go into it. But you've got meditation, you've got mindfulness, you've got yoga, you've got CBT, you've got, in fact, in my last book, I listed about 40 of the different things that you can do, from fucking volunteering to curry clubs to actual psychological tools. I don't care what you do. You just have to opt into your healing. You have to try them all. And then keep or discard any which one you want. I've tried so many different fitness things. Yeah. Like, I've gone to them and I've just gone, no. Like these people rave about it, but for me, no. And that's okay. Now go try something else.
Let me praise that, because I think that's so well said, is no one can tell you what to do. And like, I've got a coaching client I deal with, and she can't meditate. She hates it. The idea of slowing her mind down, kills her. But she's someone who can she'll run 3 times a day, and that's her version of mental health. But by her opting into something, she finds success. But it's giving yourself the space and time to opt into something that's going to do your mental health good, right?
Yeah. And so, a client like that, and she's running, yeah, cool. But what I would recommend to her in replacement of something like meditation is those runs need to be headphone free.
Okay.
And they should be in nature, because what that does is it takes you away from the distractions of cars, headlights, traffic lights, people you got to run around, all of that sort of thing. And so that allows the more meditative experience from it. For people that can't meditate, it's usually that they just haven't been taught properly. But I'll start them off with every morning, they have to listen to one instrumental song as the first thing that they do in the morning. And so, you know, it can be any instrumental song they want, as long as there's no lyrics. Lyrics are distracting. And your only job is you wake up, you put your headphones in, and you just listen to it, and you follow the music along. And the practice is, you know, every time a thought comes into your brain, you just have to let it go and return to the music. It is phenomenal how many people can't listen to one fucking song anymore without being on their phone or watching TV or fucking doing something else. And then I want them to graduate to every Sunday afternoon, lying down, closing their eyes, and listening to one entire album. Just listen to the music. And again, the amount of people that can't listen to an album without, you know, having to be cleaning at the same time or like doing all of these other things. I'm just asking you to listen to one album of music that you love. That's it. And only do that one thing.
And I'm with you. Meditation is one of those things where if you haven't been taught well and you haven't, you know, and someone gave me their description, and everyone's going to have a slightly different description of meditation, was finding space between your thoughts and your feelings is what meditation is. And I was like, fuck, that's true, right? Because especially with dyslexia, your brain is naturally faster than the average person. And so you really struggle with cause and effect. It's why we're the least consistent, is because our thoughts are going so quickly, we can't attach what thought affected our feeling. And this happens to everyone, but for us, it's just endless. We've got no idea that mind-body connection. It's just too fast. So being able to take the time to slow down is valuable, right?
But I mean, like, the absolute fucking basic tenet of meditation, I feel that most people who learn to meditate through apps like Calm and Headspace and stuff like that, they don't understand it. And it is as simple as, you are not your thoughts.
Yeah.
You are the observer of your thoughts. And holy shit, is that a rabbit hole to go down?
We could do another podcast on that, Jimmy. 100%.
Exactly. That's a rabbit hole to go down. But to understand, like, especially people with brains who are going super fast, whether it's ADHD, dyslexia, or just super creative people, or, you know, anything like that, to be able to stop and somehow get this third party perspective on all of those thoughts, and you're like, holy shit, I'm not actually all those crazy thoughts. I'm the person, the thing, observing those thoughts. And you're like, oh. And then you don't feel, because you're no longer your thoughts, you're no longer all of that crazy shit that's going on in your head. What a release that is.
If anyone takes this from this podcast, it is game changing. And people would have heard this in previous episodes. Like, when I meditate, I imagine myself outside my body, watching my thoughts in a physical means, because that was the only way I could decipher that. But for the exact same reason, I am not my thoughts. My mind is a tool. It's not who I am. You know, that's correct. Of consciousness. 100%.
Yeah, then we get into the nature of consciousness, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
blah.
Yeah, that's about 75 other podcasts. But no, mate, you're brilliant. And do you know what I'm going to take away the most from this is, well, two things. The mental fitness, I think that's so important, and it's so easy to get stuck in the mental health thing. And two, I love the way you say, just do bloody something.
Yeah, because don't care what it is.
It's too easy for us to prescribe shit. And I find myself prescribing shit to people all the time, when I should actually just be saying, you need to do something, and you need to be aware enough to choose something that works in your experience, right? Mm-hmm. Love it. I love it, man. And how can the listeners, like, I'll make sure I put your TED Talk link and a couple of
links. Don't do that. It's fucking eight or 9 years old now.
There's a lot of people around the world who haven't seen it, and it was good.
I know. It just feels like such a lifetime ago.
Yeah.
Just go to jimmyhunt.com.
Jimmy, J-I-M-M-I, isn't it?
No, J-I-M-I, like Jimi Hendrix.
Here we go. That's why I'm going to ask you, because we'd have misspelt it, right?
Yeah, yeah, Jimi Hendrix. So yeah, jimmyhunt.com. I'm the Jimmy Hunt on all social media networks. Awesome. But just, yeah, like, as people probably don't know right now, like, I am in a hotel, government mandated hotel. But I've always got time to chat to anybody if they need it. So hit me up. I'm happy to help. I have a really simple business model. I'll help any person on the planet for free.
That's a great business model.
And then I will charge corporates a shitload of money to come and help their people.
I love it, mate. That's brilliant. That is a great business model. That's probably the best business model I've ever heard.
Yeah, brilliant. Yeah.
I'll put all the links down the bottom. We'll make it easy for people just to click and view. And thank you, Jimmy, so much for your time, mate.
Not a problem.